What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This is the Action Network Podcast.
Yes, it is. It's good.
Without further ado.
That's what the game's all about. All of a sudden, you feel like you can't miss.
You couldn't make that if you tried that again.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Spread the floor. Let's go.
Welcome to the Action Network Podcast, NBA Playoff Edition, Conference Finals Edition. We have finally reached the Conference Finals. The NBA Finals begin in 2 weeks, and we'll be bringing you everything that you need to know to bet those Conference Finals as Suns Clippers began yesterday and Sixers Hawks begins tomorrow. Reminder that today's episode, all the odds are brought to you by BetMGM, the official odds provider of the Action Network Podcast, and that you should follow NBA Bet on Twitter, which is our partnership with the NBA, bringing you betting information, and you can get great, great information, not only there, but the Action Network and the Action Network app, where you can track all our picks, including the red hot Brandon Anderson. And I am just going to open the floor and let Raheem Palmer do a victory lap for his weekend, because Raheem had himself a weekend.
I'm stupid. You're smart. I was wrong. You were right. You're the best. I'm the worst. You're very good looking. I'm not attractive.
All right. As long as you're willing to admit that.
So I had the Clippers on Friday. I took the Clippers for big money on Friday. And I woke up Saturday. I think we had a spaces on Friday night. I said, I'm going to put all the profits on the Bucks. So I took the Bucks. But, you know, speaking to Brandon Anderson on Saturday morning, I'm like, I want to go to game seven. So I end up buying a courtside seat to game seven of Nets and Bucks. I'm sitting right behind Travis Scott and Emmanuel Sanders. And I mean, it's one of the greatest games I've ever been to. I had the Bucks plus 195 to win the series. I had a money line for big money. And then, you know, I drive back to Philly and I pass out and I wake up in the morning and I say, you know what? I want to go to game seven again. So I went to game seven, Sixers versus Hawks. I wanted to see the Sixers get the win. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And about at halftime, I fired on the Hawks to money line to win it, because it became so painfully obvious that they were going to win that game. So I had a great weekend. I cannot complain.
Meanwhile, on the other side of the victory lap docket, Brandon Anderson, I'm going over this from his tweet on Twitter. He bet Clippers Bucks on a parlay at plus 1124. He hit the Bucks alternate line for game six at plus 180. He hit the Bucks series at plus 195. He bet the Clippers game six live at plus 312. He hit Hawks in game seven at plus 250. He's still got Clippers Bucks finals at plus 4,000. And he's got Paul George finals MVP at plus 6,000. It has been a week. Not a bad one for Brandon either.
It's been fun, guys. I didn't even fit in there. I still got Suns plus 500 to win the West. And I've got Chris Paul at 1,100 finals MVP. So we've got a lot of good options out there. I think I've got a 700 on the Bucks to win the championship too. So, you know, you put your money in a lot of pots, you get a lot of good action. And when some of these things start coming up your way.
Yeah, that's the same for me. Cause the big one that I have remaining, I actually on June 2nd, way back on June 2nd, a whole 19 days ago, I bet Bucks Suns finals matchup.
Ooh. I thought you were gonna say on June 2nd you bet on Ben Simmons to take a shot in the fourth quarter.
We'll get there. we'll get there. But that would be my biggest remaining one. I also will say, after the Hawks knocked off the Knicks, I kept thinking about that Hawks better that bet on them, the big money at BetMGM to make the finals. So I may have dabbled on Hawks.
Wow, you took that?
To win the conference. I may have done that. So ooh. I'm debating whether or not to cash out and put that back in on the Bucks or just let it ride. I'm probably just going to let it ride. But that one, obviously, I'm sitting pretty good. The only kind of hip I got is the Clippers, and we'll get to them in a little bit. Let's talk about the game, though. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go in reverse order. So we're going to go back to game seven of Clippers Hawk or Hawks Sixers first, the game that Raheem was at. So, I mean,
one
of the game sevens that Raheem was at. Jesus. Everyone's killing Ben, rightfully so. Yeah. Can't pass up that dunk. No shots in the fourth quarter in like the last three games. Looks totally broken. From my perspective, the offense was a problem for sure, but you were still getting buckets. Seth Curry was carrying you. Tobias Harris had a bad night, but then started like he made some stuff like late in the game. You know, Joel Embiid went back to getting turn the ball over every single time he got double teamed. I also like will just say this that like I found it just absolutely gross the way that Joel Embiid sold out his teammate post game. Like, I just thought it was gross.
I mean, did Joel Embiid ever like Ben Simmons? Like, I mean, like I look at it like this. Jimmy Butler clearly didn't like Ben Simmons. Jimmy Butler and Embiid were like best friends. And right. they've spoken about it, you know, numerous times, like they're going to ride for each other and everything like that. So Butler was probably in his ear like, yo, this dude's a loser. Like, I mean, I don't know.
Whether you think that or not, though, you don't say that about your teammate. Like, you don't say that ever about your teammate, but especially after a loss like that. Like, I know you're hurting. I know that you wished it to be otherwise, but you can't throw your teammate under the bus that hard like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just can't do that. Like, this thing is, like, Ben Simmons is going through the worst professional moment of his life after what's widely been reported as, like, one of the worst personal years for him. And, like, that's just not the moment to do that. I will also note that Joel Embiid got stripped by Danilo Gallinari, famous defensive stalwart on the final kind of real possession of the game for a run out dunk. So maybe Joel should handle his own shit in house before going and trying to burn down Ben Simmons.
That's a very stupid question. There's no issue. We good. We just didn't win.
So what do you guys think? They on the jump, they like to do like divide up the blame pie. So I was trying to think this through of, okay, if you got 100% of blame to spread around the Sixers, how are you spreading it out? So here's my pie. I'll give you my percentages and you guys can push back. So I got 40% to Ben Simmons. I got 25% to Tobias Harris, who was good down the stretch, but really disappeared in some of those games and they needed a lot from him. I got 20% just to health. If Joel Embiid's healthier, like he clearly played, but if he's healthy, I think that they just win this pretty easily. And then Doc, 10%, and Joel, 5%. I'm sort of feeling like I went low on Joel, but what do you guys think about those?
50% Benjamin.
This is too much. What? Okay, we're thinking about this wrong, okay? We're thinking about this whole thing wrong, okay? I wrote a big thing about what makes good playoff teams.
Yeah.
And the two things that were most important was you got to have guys that could make jump shots off the dribble from the perimeter, and you got to have a versatile defense. The Sixers do not have a versatile defense, which is why Trae Young in all these runs got to go to the floater or the floater lob every single time. They do not have guys that can make jump shots off the dribble because they basically decided to build around Joel Embiid. So you had Seth Curry, who's a spot-up shooter, played great, was awesome, and Tobias, who's largely like a spot-up shooter, that also kind of slashes. He is not a give the ball to the guy on the perimeter and let him run pick and roll. They did not have that guy. So the idea that Ben's on the hook for 50% is ludicrous. Like, this roster is not built for how the playoffs are. Like, a lot of it is, I'll say this, if you could switch pick and roll, look, the overall defense was good for the Sixers. And the numbers with Joel are great. But if you're able to switch those pick and rolls, those lobs aren't happening to Capella. Those floaters to Trey aren't happening. It's not happening. So they're limited in that way. And then on the other end, like, Joel's taking a bunch of mid-range jump shots, which it was great all year, and then he started missing them because that's hard to sustain the entire season, especially on a torn meniscus. So, like, I will say that I think more – I would put 40% on Doc. You've got, like, when Brandon, I had missed this one on Doc. When Brandon let me know last night that Doc had lost 5 game 7s at home. That is damning.
Yeah.
Like, that is damning. I mean, Raheem, you've mentioned it. Like, home teams win those games 70% of the time. It's almost like since 2010, home teams win game seven 70% of the time, and the other 30% is Doc Rivers. And then, and like, I think Maury came in late to the process, right? He only had like a year. Like, he had one summer to really do this. I think he'll reshape the roster this year with the trade of Ben Simmons. I'll say this. There's a lot of ways in which I think Ben Simmons, like, if Ben Simmons goes to Portland, I'm probably picking them to win the division next year. Like, he's still a really good player. He had a bad series where he got shook. And I'll also say this. He was de-emphasized the entire year. Like, I noticed this way back that, like, they had moved entirely away from Simmons last year. And under the Brett Brown, it was like this, like, nice kind of counterpoint of, like, Embiid would have stretches where he dominated and Ben Simmons would have games where he dominated. And, like, they would play together and it, like, actually kind of, like, worked. And then basically Doc came in and was just like, no, this is Joel Embiid's team and we're doing everything around Embiid, which they got the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. So you can't say it didn't work. Lost game seven at home to the Hawks. So
here's my question with Ben Simmons. If this is not Ben's fault, and I agree, like, you know, traditionally you could say, okay, well then it's the GM's fault, but we can't really totally say that because it's his first year. You know, it takes some time to kind of rebuild the team and get the pieces where you want. And I think even to get them where they did, Maury did a great job bringing like Seth Curry. Like, think about what they look like without Seth Curry in that series. So my question with Ben is this. You know, the NBA doesn't work this way, but let's say that you're starting new with a new team and you're trying to build it in a team that makes Ben look successful. What does that team look like? Like, when you get to this moment, a game seven or get to a conference finals, what role is Ben playing and who are the sort of players you want around that team? I'm not saying there isn't that, just like, what are the players that we're building to make the Ben Simmons on a top five contending team?
Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez, PJ Tucker.
Yeah, so just the Giannis plan.
Yeah.
Except that he's clearly worse than Giannis, though, by a lot.
Okay, how?
Talent?
Okay, but like, at what?
Eyes?
You know what? I disagree with that.
Athleticism?
Athleticism? You don't think Ben Simmons is as athletic as Giannis?
I don't see him like taking one dribble from the 3-point line and just dunking on dudes.
He's bigger. Giannis
I can't
bigger.
See him taking one dribble in the paint and dunking on dudes.
He doesn't have Giannis's wingspan. He doesn't have Giannis's wingspan.
Right. He's not as big. I'll admit that. He's not as big.
He's not as big.
But he's also more maneuverable because of that. Like, the games are honestly very similar. Can't hit free throws. Don't have a jumper. Can attack in transition. They're absolute monsters. The biggest thing, the biggest differential, honestly, is that Giannis has more post moves. He doesn't go to him enough, but like he did enough in that series, which we can transition to that one.
You know, I'll
go ahead.
Yeah, also, Giannis looks like a pretty great shooter next to Ben, so that says something.
I was watching Ben's summer league performances last night, and it feels like the Sixers have stunted his growth. No, I'm dead serious. Like, I mean, he's literally out there taking mid-range jumpers. Yep. He's running the floor. He's looking like magic. Yep. So I just think he needs the same change of scenery that Fultz had. Like, you look at Fultz in Orlando, it's a completely different player than where he is in Philly. So
you know my hot
I
take?
Have a lot of questions.
You know my hot take?
Yep.
Markelle Fultz looks broken, goes to Orlando, looks much better. Ben Simmons looks broken. Is Joel Embiid toxic? That's my hot take. Is Joel Embiid toxic?
I don't think Joel Embiid is toxic. I think that the Sixers organization.
Let me ask you.
Terrible.
Let me ask you though. Who loves playing with Joel? Who has been like, man, I love playing with Joel Embiid.
Jimmy Butler.
Right. Is Jimmy Butler known to be the guy that like is all like?
Like, I wasn't saying that to refute the point, by the way. Exactly. I was putting them squarely in the same bucket.
No, but here's the thing. I don't even think that here's the thing. Simmons has to go one of two ways. He either has to be built around like Giannis, and after these playoffs, that's never going to happen. Like, he's at his lowest point. Like, people are now like, is Ben Simmons an NBA player? And I'm like, guys, come on.
It's ridiculous.
But on the other side, like, I think that he's going to be a number two. Again, If they pull off CJ, Robert Covington, and pieces for Simmons and pick one of Maxey or Tybalt, okay, Portland, if you give Dame Ben Simmons to run pick and roll with, before Simmons was drafted, I wrote like a 1500 word piece on CBS Sports. And I said, look, if you want to know where the best, like I'm dead serious. Simmons should go number one because we're just watching what Draymond Green can do. Imagine Ben Simmons is like a mega Draymond Green.
Yeah. Yeah, I had tried to come up with some trade ideas, and I was trying to brainstorm if there was a trade that put Ben Simmons in Golden State, basically in place of Draymond Green. And I don't think that there is, but putting him into that role would be amazing.
There's one floating right now that is like not floating in terms of league circles. Like this was a fan suggested one of Simmons to Golden State, Draymond to Portland, CJ to the Sixers.
Ooh,
yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. I don't think Golden State even considers trading Draymond right now, but it's an interesting just because of I don't know, I guess maybe I'm tied to brand loyalty. They've just gone through so much together that I feel like they need
who's their owner. Light years.
I mean, but you know what, I can see them
to get a title.
I can see them running the gang back together with Clay coming back. That's how you sell it.
This is Action Network podcast producer Matt Mitchell, here to tell you our friends at BetMGM have a great new sign-up offer for our listeners, a $600 risk-free first bet. Here's how it works. If you don't already have an account at BetMGM, just sign up, make your first deposit, and place that initial wager. If the bet wins, you get all the money. If it doesn't win, BetMGM will refund you in free bets up to $600. It's that simple. Just click on the link in this episode description to get started. BetMGM has been a great podcast partner, and they've got all the features gamblers like us love, like live betting and daily odds boosts. Plus, they're compatible with BetSync, so when you place a wager at BetMGM, that bet can automatically be tracked in your Action app. So open an account today and make your first bet risk-free up to $600. Just click on the link in this episode description to get started. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Michigan, New Jersey, Colorado, Indiana, West Virginia, Iowa, Virginia, Tennessee, Nevada, or Pennsylvania. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada, 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-270-7117 in Michigan, 1-800-889-9789 in Tennessee, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, or 1-888-532-3500 in Virginia. BetSync not available in Nevada. Thanks for listening. Now back to the show.
First, we can't get out of this. Let's give some credit to the. This is a bad expletive here, Matt Mitchell. Let's give some credit to the motherfucking Hawks. Like, holy shit. Okay, so like Trae Young burns MSG to the ground, goes to Philly, and runs them, gets them booed off their home court after a game in which he didn't even play well. Kevin Huerter annihilates Seth Curry in the last three games.
That was brutal.
Nate McMillan, who honestly has not been a great playoffs coach. Like there's just been a lot of series where you can look back and go like, ooh, not so great there. He was awesome in the series, pushed all the right buttons, made the adjustments. A lot of this really was the Sixers melting down the 26 point lead in game five, the way that they just like fell apart in game seven again, Doc Rivers, but the Hawks deserve a ton of credit for just like keeping with it, staying with it. Bogdanovich has a bad knee and they still get this win.
Yeah, Trey shot like 4 for 700 and they still got the win.
On this podcast, we said that the Hawks were live, but none of us really believed they could win the series. Like we all were like, them plus 2.5 plus 1.5. Like
That Trey three with like 2 minutes and 35 seconds to go when they were up 90-87.
Hold.
Like, it was so crazy because it felt like, what were the Sixers doing there? Like, Simmons was on Trey, and it looked like they were supposed to switch. But I guess, you know, Simmons wanted to fight through the screen. And before you know it, Trey just gets an open three. And I'm just like, oh, my God. Like, I saw it happening, and I'm like, oh, my God. This is over.
Just immense respect for the Hawks, who now at BetMGM, the official odds provider of the Action Network podcast, remain obviously like the longest odds to win in the NBA, like that they've got to be the biggest dogs remaining just based off of like reasonable projections, but they are a plus 1100 to win the NBA title. Hawks Clippers is plus 2000. Hawks Suns is plus 475. So that's how that's going. And then to win the title, yeah, the Hawks are plus 1100. We'll get to their series price versus the Bucks in a minute. So let's transition to the Milwaukee Bucks, who did it. They beat the Nets. They beat Kevin Durant. My big takeaway is largely, look, the Nets didn't have Kyrie Irving. They didn't have James Harden to start the series. Harden was on one leg. There's a lot of ways. I don't necessarily, people do this and it bugs me where they just go like, well, they had Irving and Harden. I'm like, if they have Irving and Harden, everything changes. It's chaos theory. Like everything changes. The matchups change. The dynamics change. Like maybe Blake Griffin doesn't have the series that he has. Maybe Mike James early in the series doesn't have the series that he does. Maybe Drew Holiday has more success. Like there's all these kind of things that change if the injuries aren't there. I will say this. It just kind of feels like to me, the Bucks finally got the breaks that they have, haven't gone their way the past two seasons, that in their previous playoff failings, things never went their way. They, even if there were matchup stuff and Bud didn't make adjustments, and he made a lot of adjustments in the series, then the shots just wouldn't fall. And it seemed like that for much of game seven. And then Drew Holiday came up huge in game in the fourth quarter. So did Chris Middleton. That to me is kind of like the lesson. And I will say it's kind of hard to tell how good the Bucks are because they faced a team that wasn't built to beat them, but was going to, they switched everything. And I'm really curious to see if the Hawks do this, but the Nets don't have to feel bad about anything. They'll just run it back. But the Bucks, I thought finally got the breaks, Brandon.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that there's really any Nets fallout. You make a few changes. You need to bring in a veteran point guard, probably get rid of DeAndre Jordan. There are things to do. But the Nets just look and they're like, well, we got hurt. We pushed to the limit. Kevin Durant had an all-time playoff series that we will always remember, I hope. But the Bucks did it. And I think we talked a while back, like earlier in the season, did the Bucks have the championship season? Like, or did they have that extra gear? And I made the analogy that I thought that this team kind of reminded me of like a version of Pop's Spurs, where and Bud to Pop similarly, obviously it's from the same coaching tree, like where there are some obvious shortcomings, but there's this very high floor. Like that's what we've seen for 3 years now. There's a very high floor of what they have been from the regular season. We know all the things that, like, because they're a Bud team, they don't foul, they don't turn the ball over. We know that they play tough defense. We know they hit a lot of shots. And like with the Spurs, like the thing with gambling is you just want a lot of chances. You know, we talked about that earlier of like you get a lot of shots and eventually you're going to have a few winning tickets left at the end. And like with the Spurs, without taking anything away from them, they just kept getting back. They kept getting to the final eight, the final four, year after year after year after year. And when you do that, eventually you're going to catch the breaks. Eventually you're going to play one of those teams with their stars missing, or you're going to see the one seed upset in front of you instead of you being the upset one seed. Without taking anything away from how great those Spurs were or what the Bucks just accomplished, it just sort of feels like that's kind of what's happening. Like things are breaking a little bit their way. You know, they were down 0-2 without one of those Nets stars. Like they were getting run for the beginning of that series. And I don't think any of us really thought that things were going to flip at that point. I don't know what the adjustment was. The adjustment was they grinded out an ugly, ugly game three win in an insult to rock fights. And I remember Raheem and I talking then that like you never know. It doesn't look good for them, but you never know what one win might do just to keep things alive. You never know what just staying alive can do. And then the very next game, Kyrie gets hurt and they win another game. And boy, they needed it. They needed it, all those breaks just to get there. Doesn't matter though. If you get to the end, it doesn't matter that you play the Hawks instead of the Sixers. Doesn't matter that you played Mike James instead of James Harden. It doesn't matter. You get the banner. You had the banner. That's it. You're the champions. There's no asterisk. There's no anything else. You beat the teams that you played, and the Bucks are in a great spot now to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, nobody takes away the Raptors championship because they face the Warriors without KD and Clay, right? Like, you play who's in front of you. Raheem, are you more, less, same impressed with the Bucks after the series?
I'm impressed. I mean, they pulled it out. I mean, it was just KD had an all-time great series. I just, you know, there were various parts. And also, here's the thing. They missed their free throws down the stretch, and they probably should have won that game in regulation. But to have the resolve to actually come back from that. And then, you know, there was a sequence in overtime where the Nets got four offensive rebounds, and they didn't score on one of them. And, you know, Brook Lopez was big. He had the clutch block on KD when KD could have put the game up four. And it just felt like if the Nets had scored one other basket, you know, they're up four. There's no way the Bucks are going to catch him, you know. And, you know, Giannis, he actually put his head down.
Yeah.
He got that tough basket with 1 minute to go on KD. You know, Chris Middleton hit tough shots. Drew, he played poorly for most of the game, but he hit tough shots. So to me, I'm just, you know, I talk a lot about the resiliency and the linear effect of going through so much pain. You see it with the Bulls. You saw it with, you know, the Warriors. They lost a couple series before they finally cut through. And I feel like this is the time for the Bucks where they finally cut through. And I hate to, you know, bring up these narrative like aspects of things, but I think that matters. And I think the psychology of just going through pain, like I know I've gone through pain in my life. Like I've spoken about it, you know, on my timeline. I used to bet $10 a game on basketball games. I struggled. I've gone broke. I've gone through all these different things, and I finally have cut through. So when I see teams do that, that's something I like to bet on. So I put a lot of stock into it.
Yeah, that's real. Like you can make all the statistical arguments you want against that, but we all have experienced that feeling and what it feels like to get that breakthrough and what it feels like, you know. They just did this against the title favorite Nets, and don't forget, against the Heat, the team that knocked them out last year, like the team that they were haunted by waiting for all year. Like those two huge psychological blocks to get past, I think, you know, it's ludicrous to think that as a player on the court that didn't mean anything to you. We all have experienced that before.
Let's get into some actual betting here. Bucks take on Hawks. Bucks are -500. Which is by far the heaviest price that I've seen out there. At BetMGM, the official odds provider of the Action Network podcast, Hawks are +375 to win this series. The spread on wins in this series, you've got Bucks -2.5 is +110. -1.5 is -225. Hawks +2.5 is -130. And Hawks +1.5 is +185. They're basically, they like Bucks in six is what the numbers are telling you. The exact series results is you can get, by the way, they opened up a new odd set at BetMGM on these props, which is you can get two results. So you can get Bucks 4-0 or 4-1 at +110, Bucks 4-2 or 4-3 specifically at +150. You've got Bucks 4-2 is +350. Bucks 4-1 is +230. Hawks and 7 is +1100. Hawks and 6 is +1100. I don't want to overreact, and that's always tough, right? I think this matchup's kind of interesting to me in that the Hawks have all these shot makers, right? The Bucks are going to want to play Brook again. They've made playing Brook Lopez work in their two playoff series. They have not, nobody's played Brook off the floor. The Hawks are going to probably be able to get a lot to that same lob mechanism that they got versus the Bucks or versus the Sixers. Like they're going to be able to get to that again because they're still going to have to play drop. You have to step up a little bit, and that leaves the weak side open. The Bucks' weak side protection's a little bit better. Defensively, I think, is kind of the concern. The Hawks can switch, though. Like Capella, that's the whole thing with him in Houston, is that one of the reasons he was viable for them was because he could switch. So I wonder if they're just going to switch everything 1-5 pick and roll. The problem I think then is what the Bucks will do is they'll just run different sets of pick and roll. Like they'll use Middleton as a screener or use Middleton in the screen and roll with Giannis. And that's going to create, I think, a lot of matchup problems. Like it was one thing when you're trying to face Embiid, when you know you can double and bring help because he's going to telegraph it. The Bucks, it's all movement based. It's all, everything is like slicing to the rim and actions and then kickouts. There's two ways this goes. The Bucks think that they've won, they've gotten it. Like they were so happy to win that Nets series, which they should be. And they let their guard down, and the Hawks sneak into this thing and do the same thing to them versus the two teams that underestimated them before, or the Bucks are in that other zone where they're just like, nope, we beat the Heat and the Nets. We are no one's beating us now. What are your initial thoughts on this series?
So when I look at this, when I saw the line, I thought the line was a little too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, my model personally makes this game five first. Like, yeah, it's like Bucks minus five, 4.5 or something like that. So I think 7 is just really, really high. But I think
I grabbed an 8. I'll say I grabbed an 8 last night.
I think the loss of DeAndre Hunter is really, really big for the series. I just don't know how they guard Chris Middleton. I think Middleton could have a really big series. I think he could have the series that I thought Tobias Harris would have and didn't have. So, I mean, obviously the Bucks are favorite, but I kind of don't know how to approach it from a betting standpoint as of right now. And then I can't even really play my game 7 angle because both of these two teams are coming off of a game 7. So that's a little frustrating for me.
So, that was my only concern was that the Bucks have another extra day, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so the Hawks are on short turnaround coming off of game 7. But when I just, 8's just too much, man. Like, that is just too much. This Hawks team has been, like, what the line basically has told us, but for the series and for game 1, is the books are basically like, this was more about Philly imploding than it was about the Hawks, which makes sense because statistically the Sixers dominated them. Like,
yeah,
the Sixers losing that series is embarrassing because they were so dominant when they weren't imploding. And that, I think, is causing. Now, it takes 2 to tango, but that's definitely what the books are saying, is they're just like, look, we're still not convinced by this Hawks team. Like, they beat the Knicks. All right, fine. The Sixers imploded. We think that series was more about the Sixers than it was about the Hawks, Brandon.
And I have a hard time disputing that, but you'd think that the books should look at the Bucks series and wonder if that series was more about the Nets than the Bucks in some ways also, you know, like that the Nets, you know, lost their guys. Yep. And like, why can't you make that same argument and then ding the Bucks a little bit? So it's interesting to me. So I've really have believed in the Hawks this far. I picked the Hawks in 6 last series. I picked the Hawks to win game 7 when we got there. I don't like this for Atlanta. I think we all need to really appreciate how awesome Atlanta has been and how much fun Trae Young has been and how great all the players have been. We need to think about that a lot for the next day or two, because I think that this is not going to go so well for them. Here are the problems that I'm seeing. Who's guarding Chris Middleton? Who's guarding Giannis? I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. Second problem, Jrue Holiday on Trae Young. It's not going to be fun for him. Like, Trae is, I think Jrue is a much better sort of defender. Like, Trae struggled at times with Ben Simmons or with Matisse Thybulle last round.
Yeah.
I think because of the size, Drew's not the same size, but I like Holiday, like his quickness and his ability laterally and being able to stick with him at the point of attack. Like, we're worried about the Brook Lopez drop issue, but if Holiday is better at keeping Trae out of the paint and from attacking as much with it, I think he's going to be. Like, I think Trae Young, you know, we've seen, like, look at just game 7, whatever Trae shot, like 4 or 5 out of a million. I think we're going to get some of those games this series. Like, Trae can put up some real clunker lines when the shots aren't falling, and I think Holiday is going to force him into some of those games. Another thing, we know that Bud teams don't foul. They never foul. They don't send opponents to the free throw line. The Hawks rely really heavily on free throws, and the Sixers fouled them a lot. They got a lot of free throws and a lot of easy points, and the Bucks are not going to do that. The Hawks rely on free throws, and they rely on a big offensive rebounding advantage that they even had against the Sixers at times. Like, the Bucks aren't going to allow those advantages. So I'm trying to figure out how do the Bucks lose the series, and I think that the best answer I can come up with is that they just still can't get the offense going right. You know, we just saw them stuck in mud a whole series, even against the Nets, who were supposed to be this awful defense.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the Hawks are a great defense either, but maybe the Bucks offense just is broken still. maybe Bud just doesn't have answers still. That would be the way, I think. But I think we're going towards like I'll be looking at that Bucks in 4 or 5 sort of bet. Like, that's, I don't think this is a long series.
And then also we forget Bogdanovich is hurt. So yeah, it's just like, that's a huge one.
Yeah, this is the Bogdan Bowl, by the way. Remember way back at the start of the free agency when Bogdan was supposed to be coming to Milwaukee?
Yeah.
And who could have ever imagined that when that fell through, that this is where we were heading, to the Eastern Conference Finals? Like, if Bogdan doesn't play, they should put him in a cage over top of the arena and just, like, suspend him. And whoever wins the series gets Bogdan. They get to keep him going forward.
I don't think we could do that, Brandon. I do not think that that's probably going to be a lot.
Oh, my God.
But what I do think is, I think Bogdanovich, you know, there's a lot of rumors about how that went down in NBA circles. Can you imagine this Bucks team with Bogdanovich?
Oh, man. He'd be so perfect for them.
I'll say this, too. It'd be perfect for Bogdanovich. Like, he's been awesome with the Hawks, right? Like, this run is great. He's been awesome. He has been a revelation to me. Like, I knew he was good. He was awesome in these playoffs. But if we look at it, let's look at the – I am kind of coming around to this. So, like, I've waffled between the Hawks are live and the Bucks are going to dominate. And I think I'm turning the other way towards how Bucks are going to dominate. And there might be value on – Bucks -2.5 in win spread at +110. So we've got the DeAndre Hunter injury. Bogdanovich isn't 100%. The Bucks have the best defense in the playoffs right now, averaging 102.8. Like, they will grind these games down a little bit, which is interesting because they're like the transition team. But that's also the other thing. The Hawks have not faced a team that can really challenge them in transition yet, because the athleticism gap is pretty considerable. The Knicks just couldn't do it. And the Sixers are not built that way. Like, they are just not a good transition team. That's been a complaint about this team all year, is that they are not a good transition team. Again, Ben Simmons being de-emphasized. So if the Bucks get out and they get some easy buckets, like, that's going to help out the offense and kind of boost it up a little bit. You know, it'll be interesting to see what the matchups are going to be. Let's take the starting lineups. I would imagine they guard Giannis with Capella.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Right? And then you just put... who's starting at 4 for them? Collins. You put Collins on Tucker and have him help off. And then you put, the question is where you hide Trey. You hide Trey on Connaughton, I guess, early. But then here's the problem with the starters, though. I'll say this. The Bucks, as the series went on, started going to Brooke Lopez more and more inside. Like, they got Brooke involved. He hit threes, but he also hit some post-up shots and, like, some off-screen layups. The problem is, if you put Capella on Giannis, Collins has to guard, actually, he's got to guard Brooke, and he can't do that. So Capella's going to have to guard Brooke, which means Collins is going to have to guard Giannis. And I really like Collins, but he's just overmatched there.
Yeah. Now when Collins gets in foul trouble, now Danilo Gallinari coming in to try to guard Giannis.
Yeah.
And I think on the other end, too, like, I think – The Sixers had no way to play Gallinari off the court. The Bucks have ways to play Gallinari's defense off the court, like with Drew and Chris or Giannis, whoever's over there. The Bucks have options to play those guys off the court.
And we didn't even address where Trey is going to play.
Yeah,
like who he's going to guard. Like, what do you put him on? PJ Tucker?
No, you hide him on. If it's that starting lineup.
Yeah, because you said Connaughton and.
It's not going to be him.
Starting. Yeah.
Yeah. Drew's going to get whatever he wants in the series.
Yeah.
You got to play him on. You just have to play him on Drew and then switch everything. Like, that's just what you get. But, and the question there, so there, that's an interesting question though. Will the Bucks actually match up Hunt? Because that's been a frustrating thing about the Bucks, is they don't match up Hunt. So what they should do, right? What the Bucks should do, what is blatantly obvious, is if they put Drew on Chris, Drew and Chris should just run pick and roll and get Trey matched up on Chris Middleton every single time. And if they blitz, if you try and blitz it, you've then got 4-on-3 with Drew Holiday, Giannis, and the two bigs. I will say this, I wonder if the Bucks actually go back and bring Tucker off the bench in this series.
Yeah, I wondered that as well, because I don't know that his role is so important. Like, you're playing PJ Tucker for his defense. And who does PJ Tucker need to defend on this team? Like, I could see the spot where P.J. Tucker needs to play center so that you can switch and defend the Trey pick and roll, and like Brook Lopez isn't working out. We need to get Tucker out there. I can see that. But when do I need Tucker and Giannis and Lopez all on the floor together?
I think here's the question. Here's the question, though. If you do that, Trey can hide on Connaughton.
Yeah.
That, to me, is the problem. Now, you could say, like, well, Trey can just hide on Tucker, but Tucker's going to kill him on offensive rebounds then.
Yeah.
Another thing that I like from Milwaukee this series is, you know, we saw against the Nets, both teams just stopped playing their bench. Like, what, in game seven, I think that the entire benches combined in overtime, too, combined for 5 field goal attempts. 5 attempts from the entire bench from both sides. And like, we knew that from the Nets, especially because their bench was starting by the end of the series. But I think that Milwaukee's going to be able to go back to the bench a little bit. I think Bobby Portis can play in the series because I don't think that Atlanta has the bench options to like play him off the court again. I think Bryn Forbes is going to get some open shots and start knocking some of those down. And we saw what that looked like against Miami. And so I think Milwaukee's bench, I mean, we've seen all year that that's been a bit of a weak spot. It's thin, but I think like offense only guys like Portis and Forbes, I think actually can play, and that can really help Milwaukee's offense get moving a little bit too. And by in so doing, get Giannis those extra couple of minutes that, you know, like we've seen now what it looks like. We finally got all the Bucks minutes that we wanted, and the pace slowed down a lot and the offense slowed down a lot. Maybe this whole limiting minutes thing actually had a purpose. And if they can get back to getting some of these bench guys, at least, you know, a couple of minutes here and there, yeah, maybe they get the Bucks are able to run and play some higher energy ball with their stars too.
Yeah. Like I like Portis versus Gallo.
Yeah.
Like, I like that matchup, you know? Mm-hmm. So, Bucks 4-0 or 4-1 is plus 110. Which is interesting because Bucks minus 2.5 is, yeah, that's also plus 110. So that's probably going to be my play after this pod. I think I'm sold on the Bucks. Like the injuries in particular, I think are an issue here between Hunter and Bogdanovich. God, the Sixers lost to the Hawks without DeAndre Hunter. Jesus.
Yeah, that was just, and Tobias Harris was 8 of 24. He couldn't buy a basket.
Not only that, but like Trae Young, like you lost a game 7 without DeAndre Hunter, where Trae Young shot 5 of 23. Good God, Sixers, yeah, have some respect. All right.
Wait. We got to talk about. So I think that beyond Bucks series, I think we all agree that the Bucks are winning the series. I don't think that's really shocking news to anyone listening to us right now. But so if that's the case, we got one more series after that. So the Bucks are the title favorites right now. How much favorites are they? Like, do you take Bucks versus the field? Because that's basically the odds that we're being asked to take right now. Bucks to win the title is plus 110 at BetMGM right now. I've seen it basically even odds, plus 100 at other books. So it's them versus the field. I will say this. My interest is looking at finals MVP, because if the Bucks win the finals, it certainly looks like Giannis should be the finals MVP. That would be the very obvious selection. Right now at BetMGM, he's plus 145. So on the one hand, is it crazy to take the title odds when you can just take the Giannis odds and get an extra 35 cents on your bet there? On the other hand, if you shop around a little bit, I can see Chris Middleton at plus 2,700 finals MVP. Jrue Holiday I've seen at plus 3,800. Is there a scenario where the Bucks win the title and Giannis isn't the finals MVP? Because yes, those are some juicy odds.
Yes, there is a definite chance where Middleton gets it. There's
I
a
agree.
Definite chance.
Yeah. He just starts hitting his shots and scoring. And
like, I mean, if it's a long series and the game comes down to the end, Middleton might hit the game winner. Like, I mean, he literally hit the game winner against the Nets.
Yeah,
I agree. So don't you agree then, by extension, that 2,700 at some books where Middleton is at, and when the Bucks are even odds to win the title, that's pretty interesting to me.
I will say, Brandon, the one thing I would tell you is you're very big on these finals MVP bets. Here's my concern, man. I don't want to go in on any players right now because of the injury stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair.
That's my thing, is like, because this is why I'm like going to hedge on the Hawks a little bit in the series, because I got to be like, I just can't trust anybody to stay healthy. Like, and it's not about their fault. It's just like this season is this really is a battle of attrition. Like, that's all the season has been. Like, the Suns are mostly healthy and they're there.
Yeah.
Like, they are the one team that hasn't had a major rotation player go down.
Well, until Chris Paul gets out of protocols.
Yeah, but Chris isn't hurt.
Right.
Like, I will say, let's go to that series now.
Yeah.
I'll follow up on this point. After game one, Adrian Wojnarowski on ESPN, I was listening to post game while I was doing some writing, and he said, like, they will get Chris Paul back in this series.
Yeah.
Which that leads me to believe that more than likely he is asymptomatic, that he tested positive, and either his symptoms are very light or he is asymptomatic, which is great news, by the way. And if Wojnarowski is saying like he's going to be back, like I bet the Suns in the series, I'm going to bet them more. As much as I'm leveraged on Bucks Suns, like game one, by the way, was fantastic. It was one of the best playoff games I think I've ever seen. It was so much fun the entire way. It was a great chess match. It was like Paul George was great. Booker was amazing. Like everybody played well. It was an awesome, awesome game. My big takeaway from game one is the same thing I've been saying about the Clippers over and over and over again, which is everybody focus on, they focus on things like Reggie Jackson or Paul George or Kawhi Leonard or Marcus Morris even. And here's the problem. It's their big rotation. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Because the first 8 minutes of that game, the Suns could have attacked their switch with going small more. And they didn't. They took jump shots. And then in the starter's second stint at the end of the second quarter, they finally realized, like, Ayton is open. Ayton has a mismatch. And Ayton started to eat. And that put more pressure on him. And so this is the problem is, if you go small, Ayton's going to destroy you. If you go big, and it's Zubac, Booker got to that short-range midi every single time.
Yeah.
And was able to hit it. Like, Zoo can't cover him in space. So that's why they had to try Cousins. And I actually really like the Cousins adjustment. I like playing Cousins versus their small ball minutes and versus Zoo. Like, I liked that matchup a lot. But the big key with Boogie is he cannot play when Devin Booker's on the court. Lou got too loose with it and left him in when the Suns put Booker back in. And that's when it fell apart. If it's Booker or CP3, Boogie can't be on the floor. They'll target him too much. So Brandon, I think the bigs are too much of a problem in this series for a Clippers team. And I don't know how Kawhi Leonard even getting back, if he were to get back, helps with that.
Yeah. I don't know that he helps with the bigs problem. When we see a favorite and see that we think that they should dominate, then my inclination is, okay, so what stories can I come up with for how did the underdog come through here? And one possible way is that DeAndre Ayton, who is huge, like I remember DeAndre Ayton is just a massive, massive man. And especially against these small Clippers lineups, should be able to do anything that he wants. The problem is that DeAndre Ayton still plays passive sometimes. And he can't do that in this series because, you know, like you said, he should be able to just dominate in there and put up 20 points easily, especially once Chris Paul gets back. And then you got CP and Booker both just dropping off to him in the paint. He should put up huge lines, but there are still games, as great as he's been in these playoffs, and he has been awesome, and he's been way better than I have ever given him credit for. He can still go passive a little bit, and he can still kind of have like hands of stone sometimes. And like, he'll be right under the basket and you're like, bro, you can just like reach up and dunk the ball, and he'll like pump fake and try reverse layup or something. And I do think while Chris Paul is out, like if Ayton goes a little passive, if Booker doesn't go supernova like he did, I do think that there is a scenario where the Suns could struggle to score a little bit. I'm not saying that they will for sure, but I think that would be the way that the Clippers hang around in the series a little better. We know the Clippers can hit shots. We know that. We know they can just get hot and start hitting their shots. That's the offense. There's not much analysis there. But I think that without the switch, or with the switch, without Chris Paul to be able to punish it, and, you know, Booker is not going to put up a 40-point triple-double every game. The Suns don't get to the line a lot. They don't get a ton of offensive rebounds a lot. They don't have a lot of easy ways to score. And Chris Paul is one of those ways. So while he's out, and if Ayton's not getting some of those easy buckets, and if Booker is not doing what he's been doing, I can see a scenario where the offense dries up a little bit and where the Clippers have a chance. The Suns are the favorites, though. But that's the area where I could see, okay, if we got to game four and we're tied 2-2, how did this happen? I think that's the easiest path I see to how the Clippers are still in this.
Like, I bet Suns to win the series, but I don't want to bet, like, I don't want to go like 4-1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
I think the thing I'm struggling with right now is that Marcus Morris really doesn't look good. He's having some problems with his knee. Mm-hmm. I think the Clippers really are struggling to defend this team. I mean, you guys have already mentioned the Ayton thing, but I mean, they're just letting Booker and even Campaign, they're just getting wherever they want. So it's just like, if you have, I mean, the strength of this Clippers team is their wings. You're already down Kawhi Leonard. So if you're down Marcus Morris and he's not, you know, what he's capable of doing on both offense and defense, then I think the Clippers are all but drawing dead.
Three-pointer, bang! Oh, what a man!
Yeah, some problems for the Clippers defensively in game one. They gave up 31 assists on Phoenix baskets. 31 is a lot of assists. And the Clippers allowed under 23 a game, which was third best in the regular season. 31, not third best. Also, the Suns on two-pointers in game one shot 36 out of 57. That's 63% on two-pointers. And remember, that's with a lot of Booker pull-ups too, which are not exactly 100% shots. Like, that's a lot of easy, good looks. And that is very replicable. Like, if the Clippers can't keep you anywhere down below 60% on twos for the series, it's not going to last very long.
So this is again, gets back to my big thing. If you play drop versus Booker, he's going to be the series leading scorer and he's going to go off. Like, he will go off every single game. If you switch versus him, you have a chance, which is why I think one of the reasons they started small, but if Morris is hurt, you can't do that.
Yeah.
They don't have a replacement option. Like, this is where it's not just Morris, it's Serge Ibaka. Like, that was my big takeaway, is if they could have started Serge yesterday, they're in a much different spot. And you just switch everything, you know, and you probably play Morris. And Morris is battling Ayton, and that's not great, but fine. Because a lot of it was, Ayton wasn't getting post-ups, right? They're not giving Ayton the ball and going and saying, go to work, big man. They're breaking down the defense and getting inside and then feeding Ayton in different matchups or getting the lob to him in different actions because they can't contain Booker. Now, Booker was an inferno. Booker won't be that way every game. The question is just, when CP3 going to be back? Because if Booker is just able to have another great performance, if we assume that Chris misses game two and CP3's back in game three, now you're in trouble, because even if Booker has a good game or Booker doesn't have a good game, then Chris Paul can do it.
Yeah.
And Paul will also feed Ayton a lot more. Like, Payne's more of a shooter. And Booker was a really great passer in that game, but there's so much attention being paid to him. Yep. Chris will just, if it's Zubac, Chris is just going to run pick and roll, make Zubac get in the middle, and then lob to Ayton. And it'll be there 8 out of 10 times.
Also, how much better can the Clippers offense actually be? I mean, they hit 23s. They had 23s. To the Suns, 13 threes. They put up, you know, 124 per 100 possessions. So it's just, I mean, I don't know how much better they could possibly be against this Suns defense. And for them to hit 23s and then still, like, really not even be in it towards the end of the game. I know they had the little spurt, but this was a 10-point game.
So one of the things I think that we overlooked a little bit on the Clippers upsetting the Jazz, one of the real flaws to that Jazz team, despite that they're so good at so many things, but even in their awesome regular season, they turned it over a lot. There was always a higher turnover team, and the Clippers forced a lot of turnovers. And if you think back to like when the Clippers went on some of those mega runs against the Jazz, yeah, they'd score in a hurry because there'd be a few Clippers turnovers or a few Jazz turnovers. I mean, and the Clippers run out and are start getting some easy buckets. Like you don't put up a 180 offensive rating and a half just on only hitting threes. It's because you're getting run out dunks and like putting up points in a hurry. The Suns don't turn it over. And especially once Chris Paul is back, the Suns don't turn it over. So that's another area where like that, you just need some of those easy points sometimes. And when you're the underdog and when you're missing Kawhi Leonard, you need to come up with some easy points. And I don't think that the Suns are going to give a lot of those easy points away like the Jazz did.
Yeah. So, you know, Bucks Suns is what we like have to think that this is like heading towards, which is, yeah. Man, if I told you back in April, it's going to be Bucks Suns, you would have, you would not have believed me. And you can still get, by the way, Bucks Suns at BetMGM at +155. Or Bucks to beat Suns is +155. And Suns to beat Bucks is +225. To give you a little.
I like the Suns in that matchup.
I'll take Bucks.
I love this.
I'll take Bucks.
I'm all over the Suns.
Why?
All over the Suns.
Why?
Just because I watched their last regular season game and I actually had the Bucks in that game. And the one thing that stood out to me was that in crunch time, the Bucks could not score and they could not stop Devin Booker and Chris Paul. I mean, literally every single time down, they're pulling up from mid-range and it just was easy. And I don't see how the Bucks have enough. I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay. We'll see when we get there. I like the matchup, I think, quite a bit for the Bucks, just based off of what we've seen from them. They can stay big versus Aiden with Brooke Lopez. You know, I think the biggest thing here, honestly, a lot of this is the Suns have still not faced anybody that can really defend them effectively. And you could say, like, why would the Bucks be able to with Brooke Lopez? And a lot of it's like Drew Holiday. Like, they are so much better with guard pressure coming off the screens. Like, they are just way better than, I mean, Reggie Jackson's been amazing, but asking Reggie Jackson and even Paul George and like these guys to get over these screens, that I just don't think that's. I think that there's a big gap there. Like the Suns have not faced a really great defensive team yet. The Clippers won that Utah series with offense.
Yeah, without a doubt.
They won the Utah series with offense. The Bucks defense is really great. Now, I don't like betting on defense versus offense in the NBA these days. Maybe I'll come around to your side if that's the matchup. But
I think I'm going to be honest with you. I think it's a really tough series. I think it's a 6-7 game series. Easy. I don't think
They played twice in the regular season, and the Suns won both games by 1 point.
Yep.
So it should be fun. And those were full-strength games, except I think Drew Holiday was missing for one of them.
The Suns were, like, in a bad spot, too, in the second game, too. I think they were in a back-to-back.
But given how the playoffs have gone so far, I'm looking forward to putting him in my bet on the Hawks to beat the Clippers at plus 50,000. So +5,000, sorry.
One other bet on this series that my favorite bet, like we're looking for series bets. I don't think that we're seeing a lot of great series bets that we like on either of these teams just because the favorites feel so likely and then the odds are so high already.
You get away.
So one bet that I'm looking at is you can bet at BetMGM. You can bet on who's the leading scorer for the series. And Matt, I know you say you don't like betting on the players. There's the injuries. There's all those factors. So Devin Booker is the favorite to lead the series in scoring. He obviously scored 40 in the opener. It makes a lot of sense. But Booker can still have those games where he just kind of isn't a big factor, in part because they don't need him to. Like in part because they, you know, suddenly McHale put up like 22 that night and Chris Paul was doing his thing and Deion Waiters had 25. And it was like, oh, Booker only scored 14 tonight. And like they won by 10 anyways. It didn't really matter. The Clippers can't do that. Paul George has to score. Especially with Kawhi out, he has to score. And George has scored at least 20 every playoff game. He scored at least 27 in 6 straight games right now. And even in the opener, as good as Booker was, he's only down 6 right now. So PG is even odds, plus 100. Booker's at minus 120. I think Paul George is a good bet to lead the series in scoring. What do you guys think about that one?
Don't like it at all. Kawhi can come back at any point. He's still rehabbing. That's entirely possible. The defense is only going to key in more on Paul George. He has to take tough shots. They do have good defenders to be able to put on him in Phoenix. I think that Booker is still going to be able to hit a lot of shots, especially when Chris Paul gets back. That takes more of the attention off of him. I'm not sold.
All right. I gave it a shot.
Well, you're going to wind out right, because every time I tell you, every time I try and negate it, it winds out cashing. So go ahead and get your money in on Paul George to lead the playoff, the series in scoring. All right, let's go wrap it up with the Action Network NBA podcast. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back later this week with another episode. Continuing through the conference finals and all the way into the finals, we'll also get reaction to the NBA draft lottery on Tuesday. Make sure to download the award-winning Action Network app. Stay tuned to this channel. We got PGA stuff this week. We got all sorts of awesome stuff throughout the week. Rate, review, and subscribe the Action Network podcast. We'll see you guys again next time on the Action Network podcast, NBA edition.
We're finished talking.